Welcome to Walshit's Pod, and this is the second part of a discussion with Gary Blackburn. In part one, we chewed over the contours of the United Kingdom's flawed defence review and its Defence Command paper, and the Ukraine war at sea, including Russia's grain gambit. In part two, Gary and I kick off with a look at the new movie Oppenheimer and the history behind why the bomb was dropped to end the Second World War, before moving on to some remarkable new developments in the story of possible alien spacecraft encountered by US Navy jet pilots. Of course, the ultimate spectre hanging over us, and something which will move us on to the next topic, is nuclear weapons. And who would have thought that, let's say, just a few years ago, other than people that were quite aware of how precarious things were becoming today between Russia and the West over, you know, sane, logical thinking about not using nuclear weapons and keeping treaties that were made in the Cold War, how that was all crumbling anyway prior to Ukraine, that, you know, the fail-safes, the agreements were all deteriorating and were disappearing. And there was already a nuclear arms race underway before the Ukraine war. But I think the Ukraine war has brought into sharp focus, for some people anyway, the precipice that we are actually on at all times with these terrible weapons. And whether it's tactical nukes, which was it Dmitry Medvedev was basically implying that if the Russians were beaten by the Ukrainian summer offensive, then, you know, the doctrine allows us to use nuclear weapons, and presumably you meant tactical nuclear weapons. But I think the broader public, and hopefully most politicians who have anything to do with policy on nuclear weapons, has been able to get an insight into how they came about and the moral questions involved with the new movie Oppenheimer. And even people who, like Barbie, have been sucked into the vortex of how the Manhattan Project produced the first two atom bombs. You know, what was it, Fat Man and Little Boy?
Correct.
And so have you seen Oppenheimer, and what did you think to it?
I have. I thought it was a piece of movie making, as a piece of art. I thought it was fantastic. I thought Cillian Murphy in the lead role as Oppenheimer was unbelievably good. I'm a big fan of Christopher Nolan, the Anglo-American director. I thought visually it was stunning. I think it's a biopic of the man. I've not read the book American Prometheus, on which it's based, so there's a lot about Oppenheimer's personal life. And I wasn't aware of the fact that he had dealings with the Communist Party in America, or that he was against H-bombs. So that was all interesting. What it doesn't really explore is the moral and the ethical debates around the use of the atomic weapons, and the reasons why the Americans used them, the debates that was going on internally in America, obviously the whole British effort before that called Tube Alloys was kind of not really mentioned. But current events do bring into very, very sharp focus the enduring importance of thinking about nuclear weapons, not just strategically or militarily, but ethically as well. And actually, Nolan, the director, said that's why he made the movie. I saw him being interviewed, and he said he made the movie because his kids said to him, when they read the script, "Yeah, that's really good, Dad, but no one cares about that anymore." And he said, "Well, actually, I think they should care about that, actually." So that was his motivation for making the movie. My personal view on the use of the weapons is that I think you can, it's very difficult, but you can put forward a moral justification for their use on what's known as utilitarian ethics, so the greatest good for the greatest number. And my understanding of the historical debate at the time, the debate at the time, was that the American military felt that invading the Japanese home islands would maybe cost 2 million lives, both American and mainly Japanese. And therefore, it was on a utilitarian basis, it could be justified. I tend to agree with that. You can't justify it in terms of what's known as just war doctrine, which says that you should go out of your way to avoid civilian casualties, which clearly the bombs did not do. So you can't really justify it on those terms. There's also a kind of another branch of ethics called deontology, which basically sets the moral bar very, very high. Clearly can't be justified. But in terms of utilitarianism, I'd say yes, in a way that I don't think the bombing of Dresden could be, which might be a controversial thing to say, but having to partner debate on Dresden a few years ago, I find it easier to construct a moral defense of Hiroshima and Nagasaki in Dresden.
Yeah.
I think the thing with Hiroshima and Nagasaki, you could make a strong argument that it led directly to the end of the war, which I don't really think you can make the same argument with Dresden.
There's no doubt about it. They did fear, certainly the people that were going to stage the invasion felt that Operation Downfall, as it was called,
yes,
would see millions of casualties, not only in Allied, mainly America, but Allied to servicemen. And that may have included my father, who actually was in the RAF immediately after the war, was very keen to be aircrew. He wasn't aircrew in the RAF, did his national service, but he would have been the next cohort of people called up to go and fight if the war dragged on, you know, another few years. So he might have been one of those killed. But that's obviously nothing compared to the 220,000, I think, or 200,000 people killed in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And it's interesting, in doing some background reading on it, I was accustomed to the idea that the US Navy had said, we can do this. We've blockaded Japan. We've cut them off. We've brought Japan to its knees as a warfighting yes. entity already. It cannot carry on. We've used submarines to do that, and our Navy is besieging, you know, the home island. But actually, when I was doing a bit of background reading, I was quite surprised how widespread the opposition to using the atom bombs and even the invasion was in the senior ranks of the US Navy, right, all the way up to the top. So I think there were a lot of vested different interests
yes.
in we've got the bomb. So politically, we need to end the war and we need to show them that we have this terrifying new bomb and they must come to unconditional surrender as soon as possible. You know, it doesn't matter if the Navy says they're going to surrender sooner or later anyway. And then there was the U.S. Air Force and other parts, was it still the U.S. Army Air Force then? I think it was.
Yes. Yeah, it was.
Yeah, well, they would, yeah, having developed the B-29 and firebombed, you know, Tokyo, caused mass casualties and horrific damage.
Indeed.
With that already, they were keen to see what they could do with it. And I think also in terms of President Truman, you know, having gone to Potsdam to share the discussions with Attlee and Stalin, then he was trying to square up to the Russians because they knew that a new confrontation with the Russians was looming, and they came to an agreement saying the Russians would invade the Russian Far East and also I think going to Manchuria, which they did, but it happened yes. after the bomb, I think, and so it wasn't a case of the Russians then liberating half of Japan and, you know, vast areas of the Chinese mainland and then holding on to it. So I think there was a political imperative to show the Russians to go no further and we've got this amazing bomb. There was also yeah. a military imperative to avoid the casualties of the invasion. And I think that was what drove them on. And nobody can deny the horrendous impact on those two cities. But you have to, I guess, when you're fighting a war, and this is a lesson for us today, you have to be looking at the bigger picture and the pragmatic way that you're going to deal with things. But it did open up a whole horrific new era for mankind, as Oppenheimer himself was aware. And yeah, it is a masterpiece of a movie. And I did think the bit where is it Admiral Strauss, whatever you want to call him, played by Robert Downey Jr., was wanting to know what Oppenheimer said to Albert Einstein, played by Tom Conti, was what was said. Was it about Strauss? Was it about him? And what was it? Something about him, because he was an academic. Just to simplify, an academic colleague of Oppenheimer's. And but in the end, Nolan brought us back to that conversation, and I found that quite moving in the way that he did that, because he showed the peril to humanity by saying, without using any spoilers, by saying something that kind of put it all into context right at the end. So I think it was his best movie since maybe The Dark Knight. I like The Dark Knight. Yes. It's a brilliant movie. That's about the War on Terror. And then you've got The Prestige, which is amazing, a thriller. And Tenet wasn't much of a movie. I didn't like Dunkirk, but I do like as a work of art and also a powerful drama, the latest one, the Oppenheimer movie. So, yeah, and quite something to sit through. Yeah,
yeah, 3 hours. Yeah, I think it was his best.
Yeah,
his best movie. I yeah, Dark Knight is an amazing movie. Yeah, no, I agree with everything that you just said. That now, obviously, there's a bit. It's a historical hot potato. It's unquestionably the case that the Japanese Navy and Merchant Marine were basically finished. They could have been starved into submission. I think the fact that after Nagasaki, Hirohito basically said, we need to bring this to an end. My reading of the topic is that the Japanese army in particular wanted to fight it out so they'd get better terms. And they thought if they fought it out, they'd get better terms. And I think initially that view held sway. But after Nagasaki, obviously the emperor stepped in and accepted the unconditional surrender, although they allowed him to stay on, but not as a god. So actually, what's interesting about that, another thing is, if I recollect correctly, somebody in the American on the American side said, look, if we allow Hirohito to stay on, they'll accept it. They'll accept surrender. If we browbeat them to the point where we say you've got to become a republic, they'll fight on. So actually understanding what motivates your enemy, even in an extreme situation like that, I think is a lesson. That's a timeless lesson. So the point might arrive in our dealings with the Russians and the Chinese where we need to be just mindful of making sure we don't ask for everything, you know, and there is a degree of pragmatism out there. But yeah, great movie. Great movie.
Yeah, I think you're right about that, understanding the mindset and putting yourself in their position. But there's one potential foe that I don't think we can, certainly not at the moment, put ourselves into the mindset of, and that's aliens. creatures from outer space. And I think there's going to be a long way before we understand what motivates them, if indeed they even exist. But I thought if we end on a slightly lighter note, I thought we could maybe just have a quick chat about the latest in the, because it involves a naval element, in the latest in the, what used to be called UFO saga.
Yes.
Yeah, but it was called UFO, they were called UFOs, they're now called Unexplained Anomalous Phenomena. And I don't know if you watched any of the footage. So just to let listeners know, and I've got to get my facts straight here. Okay, so that listeners are aware of what on earth we're talking about. And on earth, that's not just a pun. The House Oversight Committee in the House of Representatives, which is part of Congress, was so intrigued about recent claims by an ex U.S. Air Force officer who was involved in trying to determine whether or not these UAPs or UFOs were what they were, what they are, whether or not they're from outer space or operated by other nations, nations other than America, has made various claims. And he was called to give testimony to this committee alongside two U.S. Navy aviators, two pilots, one a commander and the other a lieutenant, as they call them. So they then went through all the various elements of this that have emerged in recent times. For example, 2017 camera footage of a UAP, UFOs, taken by, I believe, U.S. Navy Hornets has emerged and was confirmed by the U.S. military as being of an origin that they could not determine. And basically, U.S. Navy warships and also pilots have in recent years been spotting numerous mysterious craft zooming through the air, doing incredible things, maneuvers and going at speeds, which cannot be something that is, of conventional origin. And is either, and the question is, do these UAPs that have been off the US coast, and they must have been around other parts of the world too, do they belong to some country like, for example, Russia or China? Are they even operated by the, what's it called? Is it the Ghost Works? What do they call them? The
Skunk Works.
The Skunk Works that produced it in a black program, as they call it, an off-the-books development program that even the Americans are not telling their own military about. So this whole thing has gone on and on and on, and then it's arisen again. The most extraordinary thing that Major Grush, as he's known, suggested, which has really got my attention, was that the US government has for years been exploring the technology and exploiting the technology. So he says parts of the US governmental structure, whatever they are, have been exploiting the UAP technology, and they found non-human biologics at the crash sites of UFOs, oblique UAPs. So Gary, what's your feeling about these things? Are they alien, or are they some covert program by somebody on planet Earth?
Well, I think what's interesting, just going back to Oppenheimer for a second, what Robert Oppenheimer did was he got all the world's greatest physicists together and then he created a little town from scratch called Los Alamos so they could work on the problem, and they came up with a solution to the problem. And what seems to be missing here is a lot of kind of top-level physicists looking at this. I mean, you have to take it semi-seriously, I think, because not so much because of David Grush, who could be literally anybody. I mean, I know he's US Air Force, and he has been looking at the phenomena, and he's had access. He claims he's had access to many, many people who claim he said he hasn't actually seen the non-human biologicals, but he interviewed people who claimed that they had. But what you have to take seriously, I think, the testimony of David Fravor and Ryan Graves, the two F-18 pilots who testified. And we've all, I've seen the TikTok videos, like I'm sure millions of other people. And the fact that these, whatever they are being picked up by not just video, but other forms of sensors, raises many questions as to who owns them and what they are. Mm. The most remarkable claim, I think, is from the pilots, which is that the craft managed to travel at hypersonic speeds without any obvious source of propulsion and without causing a sonic boom. Now, if that was to come from anybody who wasn't an F-18 pilot, I'd just laugh. But from an F-18 pilot, I have to take that. You have to take it seriously. If so, what the hell was it? I mean, interestingly, and I remember 20 years ago looking at a declassified RAF report about, I don't know if you recall, those triangle-shaped UFOs which were always appearing in Scotland. Well, if you go and Google images and just put that in, and you will find a triangular shape with three lights at each point of the triangle. Anyway, the report was fascinating because it said it wasn't extraterrestrial, but it was a new form of plasma, i.e. lightning.
All right, yeah.
So, which is a bit more mundane, but still fascinating. And, you know, connected with that, I don't know if you've ever heard of the phenomena called ball lightning, which is basically literally a ball of lightning which can appear. And I know my father-in-law's father, he was a vicar, and ball lightning came into his church and then exited through one of the stained glass windows. And no one has a clue what that is, but it's a natural phenomena. So to the question, are there if there's only two real possibilities, well, three, there's three possibilities. Either the Americans, the Chinese, or the Russians have somehow developed a craft which can somehow defy the laws of physics. Or they're extraterrestrial, or it's some sort of natural phenomena, which we don't fully understand. I think it's reasonable for the Americans to take it seriously and to do, an inquiry into it. Because the F-18 pilots, they're F-18 pilots. I imagine they're serious people. And you, I don't know, you may well have had conversations with other people in the military. I remember, I've forgotten his name now. There was a former chief of the defense staff. I think it was was it Hill? I'd have to look it up.
But
he swore blind that ETs were real. And he was former head of the chief of defense staff. So when someone like that says something, you can't automatically dismiss it. What you should do is get a load of physicists like Oppenheimer did and work out what it is, I think.
Yeah, so. Yeah, that's a good idea. Commander David Fravor was the guy you've referred to, and you talk about the Tic Tac, so that, again, listeners have an idea of what we're talking about. He said basically that when he was in services some years ago, that he and another F-18, I'm just trying to see how many there were. I think there were at least two F-18s. I'm looking at his testimony. And he said that they launched off the Nimitz and the aircraft carrier, checked in with the air controller on the USS Princeton, which is an air defense cruiser with an immensely powerful all-seeing radar. And then they went to a point which they called their combat air patrol point. and they would and then carry out training runs. So they were saying that when they were at about 20,000 feet, this is a little while later, they a radar controller, one of the radar controllers involved, said that their radar blip of the aircraft was now in the same radar resolution cell, this is what he said, as the contact. And he said that as we looked around, we noticed some white water off to our right side. He said the weather on the day was perfect. And so the white water stood out on this vast ocean. And as the four people in the two jets looked down, they saw what he called a small white tic-tac-shaped object with the longitudinal axis pointing north to south and moving very abruptly over the white water. And then he made this point about what it looked like. He said there were no rotors, no rotor wash, or any visible flight control surfaces like wings. And he said that as we started a clockwise turn to observe the object, his weapons systems operator and himself decided their aircraft would go down and get a closer look, while the other aircraft stayed high to cover them. And he said that they went around in a circle about 90 degrees from the start of their descent, and the object suddenly shifted its longitudinal axis, aligned it with his aircraft, and began to climb in a clockwise climbing turn. And he said that they continued down for another 270 degrees and made what he called a nose-low move to head where the tick-tock would be when we pulled nose on to the object. And he said that our altitude was approximately 15,000 feet with the tic-tac. I hope I didn't call it tic-tac, that's something else. With the tic-tac at about 12,000 feet. And as we pulled nose onto the object at approximately half of a mile, the object just left of our nose, it rapidly accelerated and disappeared right in front of our aircraft. And the wingman also lost visual as well. And when they got back to the carrier, they did mention it to people on board. But he told Congress that what he found shocking was that the incident was never investigated. None of my crew were ever questioned. Tapes were never taken. And after a couple of days, it turned into a great story to tell friends. And that was it. And then, of course, in 2017, it all blew up again when it was confirmed by the US DOD that they had no idea what this thing was, and that the camera footage of a UAP was genuine. So I think you're right. I think we do need some kind of global think tank to suss out what they are, because I think if the Russians had such a vehicle, wouldn't they boast about it like Putin does about his amazing nuclear-powered cruise missiles to try and frighten us all? And if the Chinese had it, they've been using balloons to fly at high altitude over the USA to spy on the USA, and you know, some of them have been shot down and recovered. So I do wonder who on earth it could be if those two nations, I suspect they're not doing it because they're not using them, in the case of China, maybe, and they're not boasting about it to try and terrify us like the Russians normally do. So it does need to be looked at, I think, and your idea of a brains trust or a think tank is a good one. And who knows, maybe we will find out that the, what are they called? Non-human biologics were little green people. I don't know.
Well, I'd be really surprised if it was China or Russia, because whilst they have a lead in hypersonics, as you've just described, the performance of these things, whatever they are, is not, it's not like a Kursaal missile flying in a kind of straight line at Mach 7 or 8 or whatever it is. You know, it's doing all kinds of really, really high G maneuvering, which actually some of them actually have been seen going into the sea. So whatever they are, I think they should just, rather than, they should just get the modern Robert Oppenheimer to have a look at it and see what he can come up with as a theory.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens, won't we? I mean, if they are aliens, I don't know what they think to what's going on planet Earth. They're obviously just observing, you know, taking note of the madness and then going back to wherever it is they go back to. It might be inside the Earth. Who knows?
Well, yeah, I mean, I mean, a lot of UFO lore, I think, would have you. Says a lot of this kicked off around about the same time that the atom bombs were detonated. And obviously in World War II, you had the Foo Fighters. And obviously there's a band now named the Foo Fighters, where, I think, you know, American Allied pilots, I'm not sure about the Germans, used to claim to see these UFOs observing them. I find it slightly surprising that the bureaucracies of the world haven't actually really looked at it in any great detail. The other thing that's really surprising, though, is that they're now allowing some of this information to come out. I find that very odd that the David Forever videos, for example, have been green-lighted to be distributed all over the internet. So we've all seen the TikTok videos. So it's a bit odd that this is dripping out. And the very fact that they're allowing David Grush, is he still a serving officer or is he retired?
He's retired. Described in one...
Has he retired?
One newspaper as a retired intelligence official. Yeah.
Right. So they're allowing some information to come out, having just poo-pooed it or just suppressed it for so long, to allow these videos, which obviously the property of the Pentagon, to be distributed is odd in itself. Maybe we're being softened up for a big reveal. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe we are. And I look forward at some future date to getting one of the alien non-human biologics on for a chat on the Warships Pod.
Because what it would mean is that all kind of terrestrial conflict would be rendered null and void. There wouldn't be much point. But
yeah.
There's an academic called Barry Buzan who, his theory was that what the world should do in order to avoid the conflict is to focus on the inevitable fact that one day we'll be hit by an asteroid, and therefore all the kind of the collective effort should be in developing weapons to shoot down asteroids. And if you did that, the peace and harmony would reign throughout the world. That was his theory. So, you know, but I don't know. It's a point of view, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's... peace and harmony should reign throughout the world. I think that's a good point for us to end on, actually. So cool. Can I wish you peace and harmony? And yep. Thanks for coming on. And I wish all our listeners peace and harmony. And let's hope that we're all still here next time we actually record Warships Pod. But anyway, thanks for coming on.
Cheers, Ian. Thank you.
You can read my review of Oppenheimer and also the latest Mission Impossible movie in the current edition of Warships IFR, the September magazine. And we also have features on UK strike carriers being back in action, Russia's Black Sea grain gambit, and the US Navy suffering some submarine problems in terms of getting vessels to sea. There's also an interview with the boss of the Bulgarian Navy, a look at Sweden's fleet in NATO, and something on the Talisman Sabre exercise off Australia. It's an action-packed edition. For more Warships IFR, you can visit our website at warshipsifr.com, follow us on Facebook at warshipsifr, and also Twitter at warshipsifr. And we also have a YouTube channel called Warships IFR TV. Thank you for listening, and there will be another episode of the Warships Pod unleashed soon.